All right, well, welcome back, everybody. And there's no reason to be in the other room. The food's all been eaten up and the coffee's been drunk. So.
And the auction has been ended.
Thank you, Mark. We're going to do a section on education, which is really very important. And I want to introduce our panel. They're all going to give a short presentation. So I'd like to ask you to hold your questions until everyone's had a chance to give their presentation. And we've set aside time to do some questions and answers when we're finished. So in the orders of the presentations, Aaron M. Biddle serves as the Archivist Librarian and Head of Digital Projects for UCLA Ethnomusicology Archive, which is one of the largest and oldest ethnographic audiovisual archives in North America. Aaron has a master's degree in library information science and ethnomusicology, and his bachelor's degree in music education. And his principal areas of research and professional practice are digital archives, archival education, and the implementation of open standards and open platforms for preservation and access. He's also an active musician and plays with the Los Angeles-based Balkan Brass Band Free Range Orchestra. Karen Fishman, who is going to give us just a few comments because she's shy and retiring, is the reference librarian archivist in the recorded sound section of the Library of Congress, and usually librarians are shy and retiring. Karen provides research assistance to Congress staff and to the public for all areas of recorded sound, including music performance, recording history and technology, radio broadcasting, audio preservation, rights and copyright issues, and also knows where to find the good restaurants around the library. She has given many presentations on the library sound recording collections and is currently serving as co-chair of the ARSC Education and Training Committee, so no wonder why she's here in this module, and is co-president of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Chapter of ARSC. She also works for the Mid-Atlantic Regional Conference, SAA, and is a graduate of the University of Maryland with a master's degree in library science and archives concentration. Then we're going to have Mark Hood, who's an assistant professor of music in the Department of Recording Arts in the Jacobs School of Music at Indiana University. And from 2008 to 2010, he served as a research associate and chief engineer of the Sound Directions Project in the Archives of Traditional Music at Indiana, and is a member of the IU Bloomington Media Preservation Task Force in the Office of the Vice Provost for Research. So he can put you on double secret probation. Outside of academia, Mark is the managing partner of Echo Park Studios in Bloomington, Indiana, a music production facility he founded 20 years ago. And that's no small feat to have that still around today. Then Jonathan Ferner, is the associate professor in the Graduate School of Education at UCLA and is the chair of the multidisciplinary MA program in the Moving Image Archive Science, Archive Studies. Jonathan received his Bachelor of Arts in Philosophy at the University of Cambridge, and when he realized you couldn't make any money of that, he got a Master's and PhD in Information Studies at the University of Sheffield. His research interests include data modeling, metadata standards development, and archival description. Finally, Kimberly Peach will finish off the presentations, and she is an archivist for Independent Filmmaker in Virginia. She has a master's degree in library science, there's a theme here in case you haven't noticed, and an advanced certificate in preservation management. Ms. Peach represents, or we call her Kimberly, represents the growing population of preservation librarians who are filling roles as caretakers of audiovisual collections. Kimberly was a co-editor of the American Library Association's Preservation Education Directory, and she currently serves as ARSC's web editor, as we heard, and is a member of ALA's Preservation Week Working Group. So we've got a great panel, and Aaron's going to start it off.
Thanks, Bob. We're just going to speak from right here since Karen and I are sort of tag teaming as co-chairs of education and training. And most of the ideas that we're going to be talking about are things that have been discussed recently or in the last few years among the education and training committee. So this is we're letting you in on a bit of an ongoing dialogue. And I said letting you in, it's not really a secret. We'd love to have more people involved. So please talk to us if you're interested. I thought I would start by going through quickly just some of the problems and challenges that we see from the perspective of the Education and Training Committee. And I'm talking specifically about professional training and development, because university programs are going to be addressed a little bit later by Kim and Jonathan. And I don't want to spend a lot of time dwelling on the problems, and partly because a lot of these things are already what's expressed by the plan, but it gives you a little bit of our perspective of what we're trying to address. The first problem is just in educating our professional colleagues, our administrators, and the political and financial decision makers on the need for audio archives education. I think that's nothing new to anybody in this room. Part of the problem is knowing and acknowledging that there is a problem. Of course, we've seen a lot of movement on that. This, as was discussed in the earlier session, partnerships between ARISC and MLA and other organizations. I have to relate one anecdote, which I think I've told a few years ago in another ARISC, but it bears repeating because it's I don't know, a bit of a cautionary tale maybe. As recently as about 6 or 7 years ago, a digital libraries textbook that I actually used in graduate school as a library student, written supposedly by someone who is a leader in the field, in the entire textbook addressed audio for all of about a page and a half, and most of that page and a half said, you know, audio takes up a lot of space. You really should just compress it down to 8-bit. Use the Mu-Law algorithm, that's good enough. And you know, there are these perceptual studies that have said people can understand speech at a much faster rate than it's actually spoken. So you could save even more space if you just remove every second or third or fourth sample. Taking up all that pesky that pesky audio, taking up the hard drive space that's needed for text. And this is a recent textbook. It's there is a lot of misinformation out there. Something that I know that ARISC and other organizations are actively working to address, and I think the plan goes a long way toward helping. The second problem is the lack of a standardized, agreed-upon curriculum, and that's not for lack of trying. There's certainly been lots of people and organizations who've put forth well-thought-out curricula. One of the most well-known and recent is the Kilgarlin Report. But as of now, there's not one curriculum that, at least that I'm aware of, that ARISC has put its stamp of approval on as to this is what training should consist of for audio archives professionals, either at the university level or post-degree training for people already working in the field. There are very few courses and scant coverage within courses of audio, both at the university level, but also in standalone workshops. The few audio-specific workshops that there are out there, and I know there are exceptions, this is a broad generalization, but most of the audio workshops that are out there focus on preservation and particularly on digitization, which is an important part of the process, but not the only piece of the puzzle by any means. And the other workshops that focus on cataloging, disaster recovery, et cetera, don't tend to cover audio very thoroughly. So it's hard for existing professionals who have to learn, have to gear up to deal with audio collections to get that specific knowledge. And if they know that they need knowledge, they may not know where to go to get that training. We certainly know that ARISC is a resource, but there are an awful lot of people out there who haven't heard of ARISC and need to hear of ARISC and the things that we're doing. Sorry, I shouldn't move that yet. There's the question that has been discussed of whether we should put forth a certification for audio archivists in the way that the Academy of Certified Archivists has a certification more generally for archivists, and that there's a debate around the pros and cons of that. I know from Karen's and my experience in recent years trying to plan workshops, there's difficulty in getting presenters to come because of lack of institutional support and funding, and sometimes difficulty for attendees to be able to come because of lack of funding. And finally, as has been mentioned already, and I think will be talked about more later, there is really a lack of a good resource with guidance for the uninitiated audio archivist, we'll say. There's TC-04 and Sound Directions up here for the experts, but there's a big gap for the archivist or librarian who needs to know the basics of how to deal with audio. And that's something that the handbook that Sam talked about in the last session and we'll talk about a bit later is meant to address. So that's the bad. That's the scary monsters that we're trying to face down. Here are some of the initiatives that ENT has been working on. Some of these are ongoing initiatives, and some of these are new or newish, and some of them are specifically in response to points in the national plan. The first is that handbook that I mentioned, which addresses a couple of the sections of the plan, 2.1 and 1.5. As Sam mentioned, we're hoping to make it available for a free download, looking into partnering with Clear on that. We also would like to actively pursue placing copies with MLIS programs so that they know that there's a resource and they know that there is there's a framework, there are organizations. Again, it goes back to educating our professional peers. Another initiative, which has been long ongoing, is the annual ARSC workshops, which now for the second year have been streaming online. New this year is what we offered it for ACA, Academy of Certified Archivists credit, so people were able to get that professional development credit. And we're always looking for ways to improve the workshop and to meet more of those needs. We've also been recording them in anticipation of creating an online resource that we're hoping to call the Dave Nolan Memorial Library. Some of you know, or most of you probably know about the Dave Nolan Fund that was meant to fund education opportunities to get some of the knowledge that's presented here at ARSC out to people who are unable to come to the meeting. And we thought with the limited resources available to everybody, an online library might be the best way to pursue that. We've actually been talking with Mark, and I think, Mark, you're going to address this a little bit more, about pursuing that in partnership with a technical committee. Sorry, I don't want to commit you to that.
No.
Sorry. Well, it ties in. We've talked about tying in with what you're doing. We're continually updating and expanding the ENT website with directories of resources and opportunities. New this year is we are starting to explore the co-development of a workshop with another professional organization so that we can take it on the road to other conferences that aren't specifically about audio or archives but might have an interest in learning some of the basics. And an idea that came up in discussing the handbook is developing a curriculum, a workshop curriculum that goes hand in hand with the handbook, really following the table of contents of the handbook and sort of addressing each of those points so that you have a combined package of, you know, the written manual and then a workshop or series of workshops that you can go through that takes you through that process in person.
I'm going to speak just a little bit about sort of our hopes and dreams, future plans, something that we'd like to see, and ENT and other ARSC committees and other, perhaps the members of the community, sort of our wish list. And one thing is to get more individual committee members and ARSC members out into the community to serve as a knowledge resource. Maybe getting other ARSC members involved that have maybe private shops, you know, that to be able to mentor, or internships that people could go for a week or longer, work on a project and really get hands-on, firsthand knowledge about working with audio and preserving it. And we could work as sort of a matchmaker for internship opportunities? That's something the ENT committee could do, put those people together. That's something we'd like to do. We'd like to push local chapters to maybe provide other ARSC local chapters. I know there's that many, but we know that Peter Schaumburg-Barger is head of that committee to create more local chapters. Maybe they could do internships or smaller workshops. We could help them develop those. We could have student ARSC student chapters sort of to model on. I know SAA has student chapters. I believe AMIA does. We could have ARSC student chapters.
AAS also?
That's right. Why not an ARSC student chapter in local universities and get people interested not only in becoming familiar with ARSC, but what we're doing? More people, the better, more hands we can get things done. Maybe as opposed to just mentoring for the conference, maybe ARSC, we would promote an ARSC mentorship, a year-long mentorship for people as they go, especially students and young professionals as they're going through their careers or their studies, that that could be a helpful thing. So these are just some of the ideas that are hopes and dreams to in the future that we'd like to work on.
I neglected to include in my bio that I sent to Bob that I'm the current co-chair of the ARSC Technical Committee, which is the whole reason I'm sitting up here. And I'm not really trying to hide that fact, so I apologize for not being more forthcoming. And what I'd like to do today is very briefly talk about the Technical Committee's efforts that align with the recommendations and the goals of the plan as it's been published, some of which align very well with efforts that have been ongoing within the Technical Committee, but I think the issuance of the plan and the endorsement and the momentum behind the plan have really kicked us forward in a lot of ways, so I want to bring you up to date on some of the things we're doing. One of the first recommendations that has the TC's initials all over it is the Audio Preservation Resource Directory, which is recommendation 1.6. The TC in the past has actually compiled a resource directory that is online, but we're in the spirit of recommendation 1.6. The TC is interested in updating and vetting the resources that are listed on that page and gradually expanding it into more of the vision, a comprehensive vision of what recommendation 1.6 outlines in a interactive resource directory with online not only links to other resources for audio archivists and preservation engineers, but videos and other things that we start to see this merging of education and training with technical expertise and technical committee issues. And the directory is yet another one of these things. So within this conference, we've gotten together and made a pledge to each other to coordinate. And also in terms of as we develop resources that are important and fit online, how do we present them on the ARSC website, through the library, online, and other, how do we promulgate these aids that we're going to work on? The biggest efforts that we're making in the technical committee right now that have hopefully concrete products to contribute to the recommendations fit into recommendation 1.8, the documentation of legacy technologies. And this is a project that has been talked about in the TC for a number of years, but is kicking into high gear at this point. In the last 6 months, the LSC and the NRPB has asked ARSC and the Technical Committee to move forward with our plan to create a series of videos that are instructional in nature and also documenting the best practices of expert practices by experienced practitioners in playback of legacy materials. So our goal is by the end of the year to have produced our first video module addressing proper techniques for playback of analog tape, open reel analog tape, and to circulate this among our community at first as a proof of concept and to solicit feedback as a prototype as to how are we going to build more of these modules, how does it fit in with the plans of the Education Training Committee and the other plans here, and how to make it serve as a model so that we can go out while we have the time and the impetus to interview all of the amazing experts that we do have in the ARS community on the proper playback techniques of these disappearing formats while we have the time to do it. So our goal is to have a proof of concept final product by the end of the year that's been vetted by the TC and its resources and the Education and Training Committee to serve as a prototype for future modules that we'll undertake as a planning tool so that we can figure out how to promulgate it through the community. How do we make this available? Is this going to be a YouTube channel with the ARSC logo on it? I'm sort of half joking because one of the things that the survey of ARSC membership brought forward was, and the board has discussed in its meetings this week, is how to make ARSC more visible. How do we increase public awareness of what ARSC does? ARSC is a very valuable organization, but it has a very low profile in the community at large. And I have to say, in my classes at IU, I have an awful lot of freshmen and sophomores who love vinyl, who are making the most retro records I've ever heard in my life, and I lived through the real era. So they're doing it better than we did, and they're doing it in imitation and admiration of the musical style and stuff. There's so much interest out there that I think ARSC has a chance to be visible among it. So a little logo bug on all of our videos. What can we do to make ARSC a visible voice for this and identification? So hopefully that will be part of the plan too. So it mainly addresses recommendation 1.A, the documentation of legacy technologies. The videos that we have in mind can serve both as true educational training and orientation videos for audio professionals, young audio professionals, but not only audio professionals, but archivists and librarians that are in charge of audio resources so that they are familiar with the formats and can supervise audio engineers so that they know what the parameters are. So that fits a little bit into 1.5 too, which is continuing education for audio professionals. This is would be not so much for practicing engineers necessarily, but for, again, archivists and librarians that are in charge of audio collections that need to know what's involved with analog tape, what's involved with disc, what's involved with cylinders, what are the parameters. So our goal is to have that for you by the end of the year and do some big presenting on it next year in North Carolina to get your feedback and where we want to go next.
I'll just add that what we've been talking about so far, our wish list for the Education and Training Committee and the ideas of the TC are confirmed by David Giovannoni's 2.0 survey recently, where ARSC members expressed that the sharing of information is one of the most valuable reasons that they see of being an ARSC member. So there is support there for that, those ideas. Okay, so I am going to skip a little bit because you've already heard some of the background about the plan. The plan is organized into four broad sections. The first section is building the National Sound Recording Preservation Infrastructure, of which part of that infrastructure is an education system. In if you'd like to sing along in your hymnals, it's page 10 that this section starts. Okay. There are three primary recommendations for building this educational infrastructure in the plan, and those are to develop a formal degree program, formal degree programs, to increase continuing education opportunities, and to create this audio preservation resource directory online that has been mentioned. And I'm going to address existing programs, and then I'll turn it over to Jonathan Thurner, who has the harder part of talking about the future of education, especially at his institution, UCLA. The plan identifies three areas of coursework that must be addressed: administration and management, conservation and reformatting, and management of digital audio, both reformatted and born digital files. The preservation and reformatting section of the American Library Association maintains a directory of preservation education offered in North America and US and Canada, actually. 2 years ago, as chair of the Program Planning and Publications Committee of that section, I was on a task force to update the directory. The previous edition didn't sufficiently reflect coursework in AV or digital preservation. This version does, but as we'll see, AV preservation is underrepresented by existing offerings. And so here's some information gleaned from that directory about programs focused on or containing classes on AV. These three programs are not ALA-accredited library schools. For ARSC and probably folks involved with the plan, that's not such a concern, but for most job descriptions for librarians and for archivists do specify that the qualifications required include an ALA-accredited degree from an ALA-accredited program. So that's a little bit of a deterrent for students making their decision on where to go. UCLA has the Moving Image Archive Studies program. This interdepartmental degree program leads to a Master of Art in Moving Image Archive Studies. The program is jointly sponsored by UCLA's Film and Television Archive, the Department of Information Studies, and the Department of Film, Television, and Digital Media. Although this is done in partnership with the library school there, the program itself is not ALA accredited. George Eastman House's Selznick School offers a master's and certificate program, but that's focused on film. New York University's Moving Image Archiving and Preservation program offers a master's degree also. So, but these are all of these programs are focused on film and video. One library school that is ALA accredited and has courses in audio preservation is the University of Texas at Austin. If you want to know more, you can talk to Sarah Cunningham, who's here. She teaches those classes, and several of her students, at least several of them, are here at the conference this year. As you can see, there are university programs turning out qualified people into our field. However, it's not adequate to meet the need at this time, and most of them are generalist AV classes and not audio specific. These library schools each have one class on AV preservation, and they're all generalist classes. Pittsburgh, Michigan, Urbana-Champaign, Pratt, and SUNY at Buffalo. I want to add that all these schools have digital preservation classes, which is one of the areas that the plan calls for coursework in, but you know, general library collection digital files are different than, as we all know, than audio files to manage. And I'm going to tempt your imagination for a minute to think about what a program might look like that just focused on one media format, you know, the potential that's there. And from the ALA Education Directory, Preservation Education Directory, I've pulled this listing for the University of Iowa Center for the Book. You know, if you imagine replacing all these classes with replace book with audio recording, I mean, this would be like a candy store to a lot of us to take classes on such granular topics within all around this one media. You know, you've got papermaking, paperworks, papermaking history and technique, bookbinding 1, 2, and 3, studies in bookbinding, historical book structures. So if we could offer a program that just really was Yeah, audio in the Middle Ages would be, that's just, you know, a model that, you know, maybe we could strive for and really explore audio education a little bit deeper than we are. Okay. And you're probably wondering why, so far we're all, these are all kind of library program centered. Why are we just teaching librarians and archivists about audio, and why not the other way around? It's a good question. We actually have a new development at the City College of New York in their Sonic Arts Department. Longtime ARSC member Gary Talheimer has made a generous bequest to establish a graduate program and tenured faculty position to teach audio preservation and transfer techniques. A very, very generous bequest to that school. So this is a school that is coming from the engineer perspective and adding a bit of more traditional library preservation theory and practice to that. So that is a snapshot of existing programs. And I'll hand it over to Jonathan now to tell us more about his vision for the future at UCLA.
Thanks, Kim. Just get the slides up here. Yeah. Slideshow. I'm a Mac person. All right. Good. So, good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased to be here. This is my first time at an ARSC conference, and I should thank George Blood, because I owe my presence here to a sort of chance meeting with George at the EMEA conference last year. I'm kind of an outsider I'm doubly removed, in fact, because not only is my background in textual archives, so I'm paper trained, as George might say, but also my expertise is in description and access rather than preservation so much. So with that caveat, I am going to be talking about what Kim grandly termed my vision for the future. It's it's not really that. I'm gonna tell you about some things that we're going to be doing soon at UCLA, lest this sound like a sort of, you know, how we're doing it good at UCLA presentation, I want to emphasize that it's more like a how we're trying not to do it bad at UCLA, and I'm looking to everybody here for advice and feedback moving forward. So, I'm sure you've seen this, well, we have seen this many times now, but here it is once again. This is the recommendation 1.4 from the National Recording Preservation Plan. So I'll just read it very quickly. Establish university-based degree programs in audio archiving and preservation, and curricula and course materials designed to teach core knowledge and skills in audio archiving and preservation must be developed in three primary areas, and we heard about these this morning. Administration and management of archives and collections, physical conservation and reformatting of historical audio recording formats, and management of digital audio assets and storage systems. So what I'm going to be doing in the next 5 minutes is just kind of translating those into a set of curricular requirements, thinking about some of the challenges that might present themselves in our meeting those requirements in a degree level curriculum, and also thinking about some opportunities for the future. So what I did was actually take do a close reading of the blurb that accompanies recommendation 1.4 and drew out some of the requirements that are repeated several times actually in that section. What I tried to do was present them in an order that relates closely to the structure of the moving image archive studies program that we already have at UCLA, which I'll say a bit more about in a second. So this is all taken verbatim from the NRPP. So some of the requirements for the a curriculum in audio archiving preservation include here on the first slide some sort of generic transferable skills along the lines of basic musical and critical listening skills, folk, popular, and classical music history. Again, these aren't my categories, they're straight from the plan. IT skills, for example, database development, server administration, and systems integration. And also, maybe a bit less generic, materials science. And I don't know why I put media handling skills in the square brackets there, that should be a separate item on its own. So these are kind of generic skills before you even get to the meat of audio archiving and preservation that are required. Next, a bit more specific, recorded sound history, some instruction in uses and users of audiovisual materials. Then there's audio archive administration, policy and planning, and also audio collection management. Then this is the third of four slides. So all these have to do more or less with preservation. So assessment of collection preservation needs, setting preservation priorities, format identification, conservation, big category, techniques for reformatting historical audio collections and digital curation. And then finally, on the fourth slide, some further categories that are more or less to do with access. So best practices in managing and providing access to sound recording collections, cataloging and metadata standards, information retrieval techniques, techniques for playback, legacy formats, digital asset management, rights management. I'm sure we could all add our own categories to this kind of laundry list of things that need to be covered. So before I tell you a little bit more about the what we're doing at UCLA, there are a number of challenges that are identified specifically in the NRPP itself. So again, these are quotations. One challenge is the need for an up-to-date infrastructure. The plan says a laboratory-based curriculum is essential. These institutions must be equipped with appropriate studios and facilities to preserve analog and digital recordings. Personnel is the next challenge. A successful program would combine faculty with advanced degrees and instructors with professional experience. These are pretty obvious things, really, but they need to be stated explicitly. The third challenge is the challenge of providing effective internships, so that students gain practical hands-on experience. Educational programs must develop collaborative relationships, of course, with local, state, and national recorded sound libraries and archives. It's critical that students undertake medium to long-term institutional internships, either as part of their graduate education or as post-graduation experience, because internships expose new professionals to a range of hands-on opportunities. A couple more challenges. Big one, really, is funding. And this is what the NRPP has to say about funding. Universities that undertake education and research in recorded sound must agree to provide funding themselves and to seek additional support from external sources. Without a firm commitment of internal funding, academic institutions cannot fulfill their educational objectives and will not garner the support of public and private funding entities. And then a fifth challenge, which isn't actually explicitly noted in the plan, is to distinguish sort of funding for the actual delivery of the program itself, but we also need to think about funding for scholarships and fellowships for the students themselves. So there are a bunch of related opportunities as well. I'm starting to think now about the opportunities that we could take advantage of at UCLA. So one claim that we could make is that UCLA is one, perhaps not uniquely, but it's one of the very few institutes of higher education able to draw on existing strengths in all of these areas, which are some of the major areas in sound production and preservation. So we have an oral history program, very good one. We have a folklore department. We have a music and a musicology departments. We have a fantastic ethnomusicology department and an ethnomusicology archive. We also have the Department of Film and Television with its amazing film and television archive, second only to the Library of Congress in the country. So the sense is, well, you know, if UCLA can't do something here, then we have a problem. Our basic assumption is that moving forward is that sound and image have been coupled, basically since the silent and including the silent film era. So if you're going to be asking or answering any questions relating to the preservation of and access to audiovisual records, ideally you would address both sound and image, or issues arising in both realms. And in any case, not only is it desirable to do that, you might also argue that it's impossible not to do that. It's impossible to address sound and image as discrete elements in any discussion of media archives. So given that assumption, I'm going to tell you now about the proposal that we are working on right now as it's basically our chance, our opportunity to revise the curriculum of the Moving Image Archive Studies program. And as we heard, it's an interdepartmental master's degree program, which is, it's not only interdepartmental, it's also inter-school. It's the only degree program on the UCLA campus that is jointly administered by departments in different schools. And if you've had anything to do with academic politics, you'll realize that you'll be asking yourself, who came up with that suggestion? Whoever thought that could work? The Department of Film, Television and Digital Media is in the School of Theatre, Film and Television, and the Department of Information Studies is in the Graduate School of Education, and we also have a third unit, which is the Film and Television Archive. On paper, it seems fantastic. In practice, it means that, you know, for things that normally you would have to get signed in triplicate, you have to get signed by about 12 different people. So it's very difficult to change things, but we are on that. We're going to try and do that. It's a two-year, 72-unit graduate program. It was established about 10 years ago. Yes, 11 years ago, and we've just gone through our first academic Senate review. As we heard, it's comparable with programs at NYU and George Eastman House, and also a great program in Amsterdam. We take 10 students a year. This is a minute program, a boutique program compared with lots of the other degree programs and a lot of the other interdisciplinary degree programs at UCLA. But what this does mean is that we do have an extraordinary rate of employment. This is the best employment rate at our campus. 95% of students are employed within 6 months of graduation. And if you do the math, that's 9.5 students each year. So I don't know. So the proposal that is being considered at the moment is to transfer the program's administration actually wholly within information studies. And the idea behind that is so that we can actually broaden the scope of the curriculum to cover, explicitly to cover, sound recordings as well as moving images. So the idea is that the program will morph eventually into one that may have a name like, something like, audiovisual archival studies. What this means, we can more easily collaborate. We can more, I guess nimble is the buzzword, we can more nimbly collaborate with other campus units such as the Ethno Archive and the Library Preservation Center, which also is involved in many great projects to do with audiovisual preservation. It means that we can hire a senior faculty person in with expertise in audiovisual archival studies, not just moving images. And you might well have seen the job description that that recently went out about a month ago for that job. We are hiring for this position right now. There is still time to get your applications in, if there's anybody in the audience who's interested in that. We also have already hired staff with expertise in fundraising and development, which is not something we were able to do before. That's important. I'll say a bit more about that in a second. Here is a list. Again, a laundry list, but this is a list of the courses that are currently required for Moving Image Archive Studies students. And I guess the idea is for you to, for us to imagine what these would look like, what these courses would look like after they've undergone the necessary revamp and revision to suit the broader curriculum that we're seeking. So, you know, we have introductory classes. These are all required classes for the students in the program. So we require a class in bibliography and methods of research in film and television right now. But you know, we can our idea is, for all of these, as I say, is to expand the scope of them. Film and television, history, theory, and criticism, American archives and manuscripts, information structures, archaeology of the media, which already includes material that is very germane to audiovisual archiving, moving image archiving, history, philosophy, and practice, archival administration, moving image preservation and restoration, moving image cataloging, access to moving image collections, and a practicum program. The content of all these classes map very directly to the list of subjects and topics that the NRPP is requiring for any curriculum in audiovisual archiving and preservation. As I keep repeating, we want to expand the scope of these classes so that they go beyond just the focus on the current focus on moving images. Just a little word about the practicum program. We're very well placed at UCLA in that not only do we have a well-established practicum program for the MIAS students, but we also have, as Kim mentioned, we have our ALA-accredited MLIS practicum program, and we want to merge the two so that all students in the The audio-visual archival studies program will be required to take at least 12 units of internships. So that's, you know, three terms, three quarters of practicum experience. And we can draw on our directory of about 120 different practicum locations in the Los Angeles area. Obviously, not all of those are offer experiences that would be relevant to audiovisual people, but many of them do. Many of them do, and so we're in a very good position, as you can imagine, in LA to be doing this. There are also the courses we just saw. There are required classes. We also already on the books have some excellent electives. Currently electives for the Moving Image Archive Studies students, including Aaron's Audiovisual Archiving in the 21st Century. We have a new class coming up this coming year on the description and access to sound recordings. We have various classes in digital preservation, including this one, Issues and Problems in Preservation of Heritage Materials. And we have a number of more advanced kind of archival classes. Archival appraisal is just one of those. So looking back at the challenges that I mentioned earlier, five of them. Personnel, I think we are okay with, because we're looking forward to making this new hire who will have audiovisual experience. It'll actually be the first time that that we've had a full-time faculty member for 3 years. So we're excited about this. The internship element we also believe that we have covered. Infrastructure is a big issue. I am being honest with you, that I have to admit that we don't currently have a lab set up that will meet the needs of future students. We desperately need one. We know that. We just simply don't have the funding for such a lab at the moment. The majority of the funding for the Moving Image Archive Studies program comes from a pot of money that is set aside for enrollment growth at UCLA. So it's a very kind of fragile situation. If we continue to admit 10 students a year, that funding, it's minimal, but that funding keeps coming to us. But if we dip below that number, then we receive less. That's basically the situation we're in. We have not done any kind of survey of the demand for graduate level audio visual people, and that may amaze you, but we haven't done that yet. Such a survey also requires some level of funding, and we're also we also realize that we can't compete at the public university level with some of our private competitors in terms of scholarships and fellowships. Again, if there are any potential applicants out there who are getting excited about this, that's fantastic, and I will do everything that I can to make you even more excited. But what won't make you excited, I know, is being notified that the level of scholarship that we can offer the average person to offset tuition fees is at the level of maybe $3,000 or $4,000 per year. If there's one person in the audience that I'm interested in speaking to, and I'm not sure he's here, he might have left the room, it's Joshua Sternfeld at the NEH, because we are very interested in moving forward with our ideas for graduate education in audiovisual archival studies. We're very committed to doing this, and I want to I'm very pleased to have this opportunity to reach out to the ASK community and ask for your advice and feedback on what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right, and where we might be able to obtain the necessary buy-in from various venues that we need to get this program up and running. So with that, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, everybody. That was great information. Let me just, we're going to have a little time here for questions and answers. I wanted to just point out a couple things that are also a part of this plan, was part of our discussions. One of the things we said very specifically was not every university in the United States has to offer this kind of program. First off, as you've heard, it takes an enormous amount of infrastructure to be able to teach this kind of stuff properly. So one of the things the plan recommends is trying to identify those universities that are interested and capable and can support it, and making sure that, you know, we don't have 50 universities trying to teach us, but a couple of very specialized select universities, and making that part of the responsibility of the plan. Do we have any questions or comments from everybody? Anybody? My microphone is coming over here.
Thanks. I have two questions. One, how do members become active in the Education and Training Committee? And my other one is, would it make sense for grad programs to maybe seek out undergrad audio engineering programs and see if there's a reciprocal relationship there where they already have an existing infrastructure audio-wise and like combine that, you know, there's dual programs. A lot of dual grad programs. So would that be maybe an also easier way to kind of, you know, overcome that kind of a hurdle, you know, on a small scale or like as a test pilot? If you think any, if that's a viable option, do you think?
Well, I'll answer the education and training question because that's the easy one. The answer is ask us.
Okay.
Please come join the committee. And specifically, I mean, you've heard the list of projects that we're working on right now. It's large and growing, and we're not a large committee. So not only ask us and say, I want to be on the committee, but say, I'd like to work on this. We actually need people to take charge of these specific projects. You know, Karen and I largely work on the workshop, which takes up a lot of our bandwidth for the year, but these other projects are as big or bigger.
Is this on?
Yep.
Okay. So to answer the second part, I'm very glad you raised the question, actually, because George did request that I talk about this, and I forgot to in the end. So one of the, I think this is a huge issue. As the Moving Image Archive Studies program at UCLA stands, we don't have any relationship with any technical or scientific or technological department on campus. Basically, we should. We absolutely need to build those bridges with electrical engineering, physics and elsewhere. I was listening to the talk from Illinois and somebody mentioned what I interpreted as a North Campus South Campus divide. We have one of those too. For us, North Campus, where we are, is humanities, social sciences. South Campus, I don't know what they do down there. You know, some science stuff, I guess. It's very it's very rare, but it is becoming increasingly common for interdisciplinary programs to be so interdisciplinary that they're taking advantage of expertise from both sides of campus. But it's still relatively new, and different people are kind of finding their feet. But yes, for sure, we need to do this. Yeah.
Disciplinary boundaries, it just administratively can be difficult sometimes. And one of the things that we're working on is simply cross-listing that audiovisual archiving course that Jonathan mentioned that we teach in ethnomusicology. Why in the ethnomusicology department? That's a whole long convoluted history. But we want to get it cross-listed with information studies so it's more apparent that that's an option for archiving students. Even that is not as simple as it would seem. However, to add to what you're saying, they're currently building, is it Engineering 6, I think? Mm-hmm. The sixth engineering building, and it is a giant building, and they're building it on the UCLA campus. So I'm pretty sure that there are people somewhere in that giant mass of South Campus who might be able to help us out.
Absolutely.
I have a message for Jonathan. And Josh Sternfeld from the NEH is actually Skyping in from Washington. See that laptop on the front chair?
Right.
So he wanted me to relay a message that he heard your plea.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you.
Can I take a second to for you to indulge me to apologize? In an excellent display of how efficient ARS shares information within itself, I've already learned that I left somebody out. I left a class out at the University of Indiana, of course, Tom. Mike Casey teaches an audio preservation class, so I apologize for leaving that out, and I am going to add that to the directory as soon as I get home.
My question concerns having better access to these continuing career resources. I know you mentioned a lot about, you know, putting up the YouTube videos and stuff, but when you talk about starting up a more advanced master's degree program, particularly the one that only accepts a few people a year and is at UCLA, where there's limited scholarship money and not just anyone can afford to live in Los Angeles, what are you doing to ensure better access to audiovisual education?
So we are actually revamping our website. It dates from 1872, I think, currently, and we're throwing a bit of the money that we have at the website. And this summer, you know, we intend to do a bit of a publicity blitz. We have been. Sort of waiting for the new hire to be in place before we do that, so that we can really push the advertising. Does that answer your question?
Not quite.
No.
The reason why I asked this is because the audiovisual class I took was at University of Illinois, and it was offered online for half a semester. So, you know, there's only so much you can cover in that time, especially in an online program. Yeah. And I know you talked a lot about the lab stuff, and I mean, that's difficult to get in there, but I mean, just having one program in one location isn't necessarily, I mean, in my opinion, it's not the best access that you could give, but I mean, it's a start.
I'll just add that a lot of the things that the Education and Training Committee are doing, while they don't address the university education question, the access to that, The handbook, putting the workshops online, the Dave Nolan Library, all of that is specifically addressed at getting beyond ARSC and getting that access to these sorts of training materials out to the broader community.
We had a question over here first. Oh, from Sam?
Curtis.
Oh, it's back here. I'm sorry.
Yeah. First of all, I'm a recent graduate of UT and was fortunate enough to take Sarah Cunningham's excellent class. And that said, I have to say, listening to Jonathan's presentation, I'm totally jealous of the students who would get to go to that program. But all of the talk so far has been about training people specifically to work with AV materials. And like in our program, our peers who didn't take Sarah's class are still going to be going out and working in archives and libraries with AV materials, and they didn't have any sort of training or education in getting their degree, but they're going to be managing people, they're going to be working with those materials. And I was just curious, what sort of, is there any working with SAA or ALA about increasing just awareness of AV materials within a program in general, not for people who will specifically be working with it, but who will be managing others who are, or just to make them more aware of the importance of those materials and not to be only paper trained, because that's the case with a lot of the peers and a lot of these programs. People are coming out without any even exposure to audio materials in their classes.
Yeah, so again, speaking for UCLA, we have the large MLIS program, and the great thing at our place is that all the MIAS classes are kind of cross-listed with the MLIS classes and vice versa. So anybody coming into the MLIS program, we have about 80 students a year, if they do already have an interest in audiovisual materials or they develop one, then there's every opportunity for them to take electives in the classes that that they're interested in from either program. And we, because actually historically a couple of the required classes for the moving image students are actually also core classes in the MLIS program, we definitely see the need for those core MLIS classes to be wide-ranging enough to cover not just textual materials, but all kinds of multimedia materials. So we're no longer operating on a sort of a paper training basis, even in the MLIS program.
I'll just add real quick, sorry, to that. That I think a lot of librarians actually are starting to come to like ARSC and EMEA a little bit more. If they have to choose one conference to go to, that they're more often choosing one of these more focused conferences rather than go to ALA, because they recognize that that's a gap in their knowledge that they need to fill in. So they'll come to the conferences, hear the latest of what's going on, go to the workshop. Of course, these are folks that recognize that need in their own education. I'm sure the idea of making folks aware, that's another topic. I'm sure there are librarians out there who need to be made aware of the AV in their collections and how to handle it, and that's another outreach issue.
I've been hearing a lot of talk about MLIS and et cetera programs, and I wonder whether that's really the right place to look, because, you know, ultimately the LIS programs are not training your specialists, or at least they're not necessarily in the business of training specialists. They're doing more in the training generalists that can specialize. Meanwhile, you have a lot of librarians out there that are in the field that need the education, and maybe there needs to be, well, there are a couple of things that I'm wondering about. One is, I wonder whether the various LIS programs, each of which offers a class or something, might coordinate a bit to offer different aspects. Each of them continue to offer one class, but that offers a different aspect of the field of audio preservation. But the other thing is that I was wondering whether we might be able to do something, take a page from the Rare Book School at the University of Virginia, which focuses more on the continuing education of people who are already in the fields and know that they need to be doing audio preservation and don't have those skills. It's just a thought that I'm putting forward there.
And I mentioned way back at the beginning that one of the things that ENT is working on newly this year is collaborating with another organization to develop a workshop that would basically be exactly that. I mean, at this point, we're thinking just one workshop, but it's a starting point, specifically aimed at training people already out in the field and who aren't necessarily ARSC's main constituents, but might be the librarians who need to learn the basics of audio.
I hate to just keep banging on about UCLA, but the other place that has a rare book school in the country, it's UCLA. So it would be. I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea, and it's one that I'll follow up as soon as I get back.
Sam,
two question comments. One, in the UCLA proposed curriculum. Will it enable a concentration in audio, or is it automatically just both audio and moving image?
I think, yes, that is something that that we are looking at. I think it will turn out that there will be concentration in audio, concentration in moving image, and possibly a concentration in digital media.
I mean, I certainly think that anyone who's a professional in either of those fields needs to know about the others, but I do believe that if it's all three in one without a concentration, it diminishes it. I also have, I don't know whether this is in the plan or I know it's in the study, you've probably looked at the recorded sound preservation study, but we had a meeting in Austin about what education might be for audio professionals and paraprofessionals, and one of the issues was whether a master's degree was actually too much education. Not because one wouldn't benefit from it, but because it requires an investment of $50,000 to $75,000 plus, and there are not a lot of jobs out there. And some of us, and this was a point of debate down there, was advocating something like the George Eastman House certificate program, where one might have a concentration for a year, and that way start an institution as a technician, you aren't like smacking your head because you have a $75,000 debt to pay after getting a master's degree and you're earning, a paraprofessional salary. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like what Eric's talking about, but sort of the other side of it. It doesn't mean one couldn't go on to get a master's degree, but just something with a little less investment that would qualify you for some of the upcoming jobs.
I agree. I think there may be room for both, right? We talked about how we only take 10 students right now. Maybe in the future that number might go up to 15. But we're still talking about a very small program that is going to be very relevant to some, a few people's career goals, but not everybody's, obviously. Yes, a certificate program. If it's not something that we do, it certainly should be something that somebody else does.
I just realized that we are talking about the handbook a lot, but we actually haven't outlined the outline of the handbook. So do you mind if I do that, just so people know what we're specifically focusing on and the potential workshops that could come out of the handbook?
Do we have time?
Are you a speed talker?
I'm just talking about the headings, the chapter headings.
Okay.
So, why preserve audio? Sound formats, playbacks, and types of deterioration. Appraisal of collections. Care and maintenance of an audio collection. Why catalog audio collections? Preservation, reformatting, and what to digitize first. Access for audio materials. Disaster planning. Some sort of digital preservation, digital media aspect, and then also collection and program management. So these also fit in line with the NRPP education standards and would fit into continuing education workshops that would be open to all, not necessarily through a certification program, but something along the lines of that rare book school for continuing education of professionals. So
that was very good. Thanks. We got one more question, and then we're bumping up into lunchtime, so.
I'll keep it very brief. I'm Mark Davidson. I'm at UT. I'm also doing a PhD in musicology at UC Santa Cruz. And I'm in a unique position to discuss the UCLA-UT thing because I was accepted into both schools, and I have a large spreadsheet of pros and cons about both schools, not to mention cost and the like. But the fact that you are where you are and you have the musicology, ethnomusicology, that sort of rekindling of the relationship between those two departments, the new building, everything in LA, you're in a really unique position. And so in my head, I thought, what a great place to be. But there just simply wasn't the sort of course offerings that I wanted. Also, there was a statistics class that you had to take to get into the school. 9 core courses, all the things that I'm even finding at UT with only 3 core courses, that at some point you need to let the people sort of learn the things that they need to learn to have the career that they want to have. So anyhow, I'll discuss the minutiae later on. But
Thank you for that. It's just a point of clarification. You're talking about the MLIS program, right, at UCLA, with the wacky stats requirement. Yeah. Okay.
let's thank our presenters, please. A great presentation. Thank you, guys. It was great.